En to.
Hallo, der var det mer feedback. Hallo, ja, det var bedre.
Nei, var det.
Hører du meg nå? Det var bra. Ja. Yes. thank you so much. Short and sweet. I'm very happy to be here today to get the opportunity to talk to you. I have a very personal interest in supporting the UAV community and the security community here, also with being the external examiner for some of the master's classes in the startup phase. So my name is Sophie Nystrom. I've been the Chief Information Security Officer and Executive Vice President for Information Security at DNB. Most of you probably know DNB, which is the largest bank in Norway. I also previously been heading the startup of the Norwegian Computer Emergency Response Team, NorCERT. And also part of the SIS in the old days before it became NorCIS. So my background is information security from A to Z, 360 degrees from academia to research to more of the consultant side and government and now the bank. And I've focused my talk around the big picture today. I'm not going to go down to the code. I'm not going to go into malware. I'm not going to go down and show you how to run code and so forth in terms of malware. I'm going to go and give you the broad perspective from our point of view, how the economic threat landscape is from the cyber criminals. And I've chosen to phrase the title a little bit different. It's not the threat picture from cyberspace, it's the economic threat. And that's a big, huge point from our point of view. We see now that the criminals are actually impacting the economy. And we also seen that other big leaders around the world, like Obama, is actually realizing this and is talking a lot about how the criminals are affecting the economy. So this is going to be the big picture, and I'll be happy to take some of the more detailed questions afterwards. But let's get into it. I think it's very exciting where we are today, the big cyber landscape. And by 2020, the global internet users will almost double in terms of where we are today. And these numbers are from Microsoft, and they've done some statistical examples around this, and it's already doubled in 2020. 2020 is not that far away. We're talking about just a few years from now. So the big picture is it's expanding massively. It's very rapid. And if you also look at the internet traffic, because the traffic is where the information is, right? We're going to see a four times doubling that from 2011 until 2020. And we also saw a Cisco report yesterday where this is also supported by the Cisco traffic flows. We're seeing a massive amount of traffic and new data being generated. And also the same picture we're seeing at the connected devices like iPads and mobile devices, PCs, servers and so forth, is almost 15 billion devices by 2020. That's a huge number. And this is going to be a huge issue in terms of governance. How are we going to govern this from a security side? It's going to be very exciting to follow this in the next few years. Also, a big issue which the global community is now facing is that almost 75% of all the data will in 2020 be under third-party control. That's a big number. I mean, we're not insourcing all our systems and data. We're actually outsourcing and offshoring a lot of it. And I think Norwegian banks are a pretty good example in this area because we almost have all our data and all our services outsourced already, and we had it for many years. If we're looking at the American U.S. banks, they have almost everything in-house, but they're on their way to outsourcing and offshoring a lot of the information. So 75% under third-party control by 2020. Huh? You can see a lot of research topics, a lot of key issues that we need to resolve in the future in terms of how we manage all the data that is under another party's governance. We're also seeing a huge shift globally in terms of it's almost 40-plus countries planning on doing new policies around cybersecurity. New policies, how are we going to govern this from the EU side? How are we going to govern this from the US, Norwegian, Scandinavian side? It's a lot of shift. There's a huge shift in terms of doing a lot more regulation around cybersecurity. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples on that as well. So the big picture is we're in the midst of a huge explosion of amount of data and how the data is governed and how the government is handling these issues. And this is going to influence the banks, it's going to influence the colleges and universities, it's going to influence the whole space. I think it's also very interesting to see how others view information security from the top-down perspective. So if we're looking at the global risks, and I've taken an example here from the World Economic Forum, which is tightly coupled to the bank and finance sector. And they're actually highlighting, in 2012, cyber attacks as one of the five biggest issues in terms of the economic resilience. And that's in terms of likelihood. It's a high terms of likelihood for cyber attacks to be prevalent in the landscape. If we're looking at the impact, though, it's not the top five, thank God. I mean, if we're looking at the top impacts, we're having water supply, we're having food shortage, financial failures in systems and so forth, we're not looking at cyber attacks. But in terms of likelihood, it's very likely that a global risks around cyber attacks and information security will be one of the top five issues, how they manage information in the World Economic Forum. So I think this is pretty good examples of what we're seeing around the world in terms of global risk, what's the landscape, where are we going, where are we right now? And the global risk is a document, you can look it up online, which is read by executives all around the world and is governing a lot of the risk management. I also want to touch upon a couple of exciting and interesting things that's going on in the cyberspace and cybersecurity area right now. And that's the legislation. And this is maybe not the topic that you talk about a lot. I don't know. I guess not. But if you look at the EU and the US perspective right now for 2013, they are actually having cybersecurity policies out for a request for information. The US have an executive order, a President Policy Directive in terms of cybersecurity, which NIST, N-I-S-T, is heading. And they are now collecting a lot of the input from the industry and the government agencies in terms of what they're actually going to focus on in the future. And if you look at the United States point of view, information sharing might be voluntary. And if you look at the EU perspective, the incident reporting and sharing here is required. So it's a lot of different approaches in the different areas here. For the European Union, they see the incident reporting as being required. If you have a large attack, you're required to report it to the EU. That's basically what it says. So the landscape of the legislation that we have to handle in the future might be very different from the EU to the US perspective. The only thing that you can conclude from this right now is that the focus from the government is a lot on cybersecurity. It's a global increase from nations in terms of how they handle cybersecurity and information security. So that's the top-down view. I'm going to get closer to the threat picture that we're facing, but I think it's interesting that you know about these shifts in the policies and how the global governance is around information security. So the economic threat. I don't know. Have you heard about the internet Trojans, viruses and worms? I know you have. And what we're seeing is that we have a cocktail of both what we call the bleeding edge and simple attacks. The bleeding edge for us is attacks that no one's seen us before. None of our vendors, collaborations, the government, no one can help us and say, here is the key decrypting this malware. It's not that easy. We have to do it ourselves. The bleeding edge is a first-time use of attacks against Norwegian infrastructure and services. And the banks in Norway are a pretty big target for this. I don't know why. Maybe it's because we have a lot of money in Norway. We have a high degree of penetration of internet use. It could be a number of factors. Why is the bleeding edge and the attackers and the criminals actually trying to expose our information? But we're seeing this, and this is the landscape we're navigating in. We're also seeing those simple attacks, the easy attacks that everybody should be known to, the phishing emails, the spam, and so forth. But the bleeding edge attacks, it's very difficult to us to be prepared. We have no idea what the landscape is going to be tomorrow. And the bleeding edge means that we have to have a lot of knowledge in-house on how to handle any types of problems with our systems. And what we see is that we have a lot of targeted attacks, and this is not only DNB and bank and finance. We're talking about the whole cyberspace at the moment. We see long-term commitment from organized crime groups that are targeted attacks against top management, to executives, key personnels. And we also see, of course, states focusing on this, not only organized crime. And they invest in large amount of resources and to harvest information. And when I say harvest information, I mean everything. They take everything on their way in order to learn how your organization works. They leak information and are there for long term in terms of learning how you do business and how you do business with contracts and big oil field companies and that type of thing. So we're not seeing small attacks, we're seeing large, long-term attacks. And they're towards key personnel, executive employees, people that handle contracts, that type of environments. And you've seen the Telenor probably example in the newspapers the last few months and weeks, how they have actually exposed some of their key challenges with the targeted Trojans and information leakage. They often lurch and monitor for a long period of time. It could be years. And they're looking for some specific data. We don't know what they're looking for, but they harvest everything on their way. And we call this Advanced Persistent Threat, APT. And this is going to be the headache for the future. We're in the middle of the threat picture, as we know. But the Advanced Persistent Threat is where most of our resources, most of our challenges are facing at the moment. And I have an example here from last year from Aftenposten, where Norcert is exposing that there's a lot of espionage against large companies in Norway. So just some examples, and this is maybe for the future the most the hardest part of handling the threat picture is the targeted long-term attacks. Just to give you a little bit of a broader perspective where we come from. From DNB perspective, we have maybe our largest target is internet banking, right? Digital services to our customers. And as the largest bank, of course, we're the biggest target. So it's a lot of fun working with information security in DNB. So maybe some of you in the future want to look at some of our job adverts, because this we are in the middle of some very exciting trends in the threat pictures. And the key point of our challenges is the customer's PC. It's not our own systems internally primarily, it's the customer's PC. And they are often targeted with Trojans. And that's the focus where the internet hackers are facing right now. It's easier for the fraudsters to target and exploit that endpoint PC than our infrastructure, which is pretty well managed, right? So they go for the most vulnerable part. It's easy, right? The endpoint protection, of course you have antivirus, but you can't protect all the endpoints on all the devices that use internet banking. It could be a smartphone, it could be an iPad, it could be a PC, it could be anything really. Anything that's used IP. And electronic fraud, or e-fraud as we call it, is of course on the rise. Maybe you don't hear about this every day, but we are facing this, of course, as a bank, as a sector, in all parts of our value chain. And the Trojans have exploded from 2006 until 2011, but we're seeing actually the most sharpest Trojans as we speak. And they're very sophisticated in terms of how many layers of crypto they have, for instance. We can see 7 layers of crypto before we can actually see what the code does. Can you imagine being able to decrypt that many layers? It's very hard, it's very complex, and it's very time-consuming. And we can't just outsource these issues. We're actually having the need to employ a lot more people to be able to handle this in-house, to be able to go down to the code and figure out what's going on and try and understand what the hackers are focusing on. Another interesting part that we've seen the last few years is, of course, targeted DDoS. Do you know DDoS? Distributed denial of service attacks. Could be from the easiest SYN flood attacks to the more complex attacks. But we're seeing that the banks worldwide are targeted with DDoS quite frequently in these days. I just talked to a large American bank last week, and this is their major headache right now. They're facing harvesting from the hacker's point of view, information about their capacity on all the different banks in the U.S. Some kind of organization is doing this harvesting, and we'll see in the future probably how they're going to use this. But we also, as everybody else, are facing with the DDoS, and well, you get a lot of traffic coming through your pipes, and you have to have a layered approach, a defense to be able to handle it. Everything from the ISP down to the application protocols that we use. One key point around all these threats and targeted attacks is that we work with the law enforcement. We go hand in hand with the law enforcement, the police in Norway. We have to prosecute the people that attack us. This is the DDoS here is a lighter example, I would say. It's two young boys that was arrested by Kripos, and we make a point out of the fact that we have to collaborate to prosecute and follow up such incidents such as the DDoS. We also have another example where Supreme Court handled one of our cases in 2011, where an Estonian person was sitting in an internet banking and making targeted Trojans to our customers. And we took that case all the way up to the Supreme Court, together, of course, with Kripos. And he was convicted. He's now back in Estonia, doing something similar, I think. But that's my hypothesis. But the point here is that we can't solely figure out these problems ourselves. We have to have collaboration with you guys, with law enforcement, with the government, in order to solve these challenging issues. So how does the infection vector, what is the vector we're looking at? In the old days, the banks and the nurses and all the awareness groups around say, don't do something stupid and you'll be fine, right? Everybody knows this. So let's, a little bit like this. Huh? I took this example from a college guys in the US. I mean, don't do something stupid like this. Don't click on porn. Don't do the obvious stuff. That's the old days, right? You could go out to the customers, to the people around you and say, don't be stupid and you'll be fine. However, if you're looking at what the infection vector is today, is always almost malvertising. Advertising with malware behind it, which means that you don't have to click on this ad, you just have to view it in your browser and you're infected if you're vulnerable. And so we can't go out to customers and say, you know, don't look at that kind of stuff. That doesn't work. That communication won't work. It was a lot easier in the old days, huh? I think this is a fantastic and very funny example. I wonder how that, you know, what the result was of this experiment. Anyways, today it's a lot more complex how we're going to actually communicate with a society in order to combat this problem. So an infection vector is almost always, in these days, malvertising. In some of the examples we have, and I just want to highlight a few of them. It's not confidential, it's actually wrong on the right side here. Everything from the Norwegian newspapers to skiing information, we've seen internet banking Trojans through a lot of the Norwegian web pages. And we also saw an example from Norcert just a couple of days ago, and the same alert last year, that Norwegian web pages are actually they're actually hosting a lot of malware. So this is not a unique problem for Norway or from the bank and finance. This is where we are today. You can go on any newspaper, you can go on your favorite holiday website, your local newspaper, anything like that could potentially spread malware. So how does our main issue, how does the attackers target our infrastructure? Well, first they go and look at the victim's PC, which is the customer PC here. And of course there's a Trojan that is being uploaded from a web page. You have the command and control on the bottom right, which is a nice GUI where you can just point and click what kind of attack you want to make in terms of the exploit kit. You also have an eFraud panel. Very nice, huh? To have like a little nice GUI that shows you how to manage your whole electronic fraud. And then you have the hacker's PC in the back end. So the level of management and organization around this, how they laid it out, what kind of control panels to have, is very easy to use. I mean, I could probably use it. Not that I've tried, but I'm not in the code anymore, but I could probably figure this out. And then they go through a lot of proxy jumps. So they jump from proxy to proxy to hide their traces, and they're trying to execute fraudulent transactions. So from our point of view, we need to focus on measurements that could stop this in the back end. How can we help our Norwegian customers to stop this in the back end? Without being, you know, oh, this is a big serious issue. We need the confidence from our citizens to be able to use our digital services. So what we do is we have an extensive alarm system in the back, right? That's obvious. We have an electronic fraud group that's looking at all the alarms. You know, when there's an IP that could be suspicious, and there's different parameters that we see, there's alarms going on in the back, and we have a huge team that handles all these alarms. So from the victim PC or the customer PC, it doesn't look like anything is abnormal. We're handling everything in the back, and if we see a fraudulent transaction, we will call you. We'll say, you know, we have seen this type of traffic. Is this legitimate or is it e-fraud? And most of the time, it's actually electronic fraud. So our strategy is that it's going to be hidden in the back. We're not gonna have a lot of whistles and bells in the front. We're going to have to call the customers and handle each customer manually. So, from your perspective and our customers' perspective, what's our biggest challenges? Well, I always touched upon this, malvertising. Drive-by shooting is someone else that they call it. Drive-by shooting, advertising that contains malware. And in the old days, you had to click on it to be infected. Today, you don't have to do that. So there's no way for us to go out to the citizens and alert them on these type of issues. So awareness around measures, such as how the habits of surfing is not a countermeasure anymore. We have to figure out other ways of doing this. We have to figure out how they can protect their systems better. And that's also a big task for Norsys and communicating how can you as a user update and maintain your own system. We depend on swift maintenance from the endpoint standpoint. And with that, I mean there's a lot of zero-day vulnerabilities out there that are being exploited, right? Zero-day meaning that your malware is using vulnerabilities without the vendors being aware of it. And the fact of the matter is that the zero-day vulnerabilities are being exploited more and more, and that's where they're targeted most of our attacks. One of the biggest exploit kits that we're facing right now is black hole exploit kit. Maybe some of you have heard about this. It's pretty well known. If you haven't heard about it, it could be interesting for you to Google it. Not to use it. Do not use it. But it might be interesting for you to know what's going on. And this black hole exploit kit, I'll give you actually a bigger view of this. I'll jump back. This is the black hole exploit kit. I don't know if you can see it all. It's pretty small font. But what it does is it goes through a whole bunch of vulnerabilities. So it goes through the Windows 7 vulnerabilities, the XPs, the Vistas, and so forth. It figure out what type of vulnerabilities that are prevalent on your system, and it goes down to Java 1, to Flash, to MDAC. It has a whole range of vulnerabilities. And if none of those vulnerabilities are prevalent on your machine, it just asks you, do you want to do it anyways? And most people say yes. So, I mean, they have a pretty foolproof system. I mean, it's really nifty how they set this up. And we can see also what kind of browsers most users are being attacked are using here. You see on the right side, Firefox and Mozilla and Opera and Safari. And also the different countries that this black hole exploit kit are targeting. What's nifty also around this area is that they're making malware very limited to one geographic region. Right? So we don't see what the US is facing. We only see what our region is facing. So if you're not coming from a Norwegian IP, this Trojan might not trigger. Right? So they're figuring out different mechanisms in order to get the Trojans to be more effective and also be better at being invisible from an antivirus and countermeasure point of view. I also want to show you, going a little bit further down, we're talking about the common exploit kits out there. And this is an open, the Deep End Research, it's called. It's an open poster that you can find on the internet. And you see the different exploit kits on the top. Everything from Black Hole to Phoenix and so forth. And from the top down, you have from 2006 until 2012. And here you can see the different fish, right? The fish in the sea. And if you're looking at 2006, most of the vulnerabilities that are being exploited are from the Windows operating system point of view. Obviously. I mean, we've seen this trend. I just want to reiterate what we're seeing from a banking side. We're seeing exactly the same trends. And going down to 2012, we see a lot of Flash, a lot of Adobe, and a lot of Java. I mean, on the bottom, you almost see all Java fish, right? Yeah, it's maybe a little bit difficult to look at, but the orange fish here are all Java. And you've seen the media exposure to these issues, but this also supports where the exploit kits are focusing on. They're focusing on the application layer, they're looking at the Java, the Flash, the Adobes. They're not looking at the OS anymore because Microsoft and other vendors are getting really good at protecting their systems. So if you're curious about this, go and look at this, about the different exploit kits. You also see the different nations that we believe are behind the different exploit kits. And you might not be very surprised in what countries are behind developing these codes. Another interesting fact that we've seen the last couple of years, is extensive social engineering towards our customers. This is very interesting, I think, because not only do we have attack code, right? Actually, the hackers are calling our customers. Can you believe that? That's shocking for me. They call and say, we're from the bank, I've seen you have problems with logging in, can you give me another secret? I mean, they have no limits to how far they go in terms of social engineering. So the combination of actually calling the customer, you have the children already infected on the PC, I mean, they're using everything. They even go so far calling the bank. Twice last week we had a hacker calling the bank and saying, you know, I had problems with this and this. That's because we have countermeasures, right? We stopped it. And he said, well, I have a transaction that I haven't gone through. my name is Uni. Okay, and then there was a man's voice, right? So our customer service was like, oh, this is not right. There's no way this is correct. And they're talking, they're speaking English as well. So, but anyways, the point is that the combination of social engineering in these attack vectors and they will go very far to get the money they want. And you've seen tons of these, right? You've seen the phishing emails. But the fact is that people actually click on these things. People are very curious. Human nature, that's the human nature. We're very curious. We even have bank employees like, well, you know what's going on. Can I click on it now? It's like, no. Don't you know? And we've done awareness campaigns around. Don't click on it. But people are very curious about what's going on, and we have a lot of people that actually do this. So it's a huge problem. I mean, it's nothing technical you can do about it if people are trigger happy and want to actually check what's going on. So there are smarter ways of working our fraudsters. We have a blend of manual and automatic attacks. Manual being that they actually change their attack code on the fly, right, manually. So if they see the customer doing this, they'll do this in terms of the Trojan. I mean, they're customizing the attacks as they go along. So that's the manual side. But we also have automatic Trojans that are trying to make fraud transactions and a blend of these. So they can actually switch on and off the automatic features. It's very nifty. And they use the social engineering on top of it. And we have something called the money mules. I mean, if you get the money, if you get the transaction, you need to transfer the money out of the country or transfer the money to another bank account as fast as possible. And that's a mule. And we've seen that there's a lot of mules both in Norway and we see a lot of mules internationally. So our collaboration, both in the national level and international level, is very key in terms of getting money mule account numbers and having those types of databases updated. So we are in the midst of these threat pictures. And we know this is going to be a problem in the future. We know this is not going to stop, right? There's no magic research or tool or whatever to stop this. So this is going to be the future for us in terms of having digital services to our customers. But it's very important for me to stress that we are trying to handle this on the back end, and of course there's going to be a lot of awareness campaigns towards our customers and trying to increase their maintenance of computers, but we're going to face this in the future, no doubt about it. We're going to see more what we call the super Trojans. Super Trojan malware, which is, I mean, they have manual attacks, they have automatic attacks. The attack code is very vast. It's the advanced persistent threat, and they're going to be there for years. If you have a bot in our network, they're going to sit there and harvest information for a long period of time. And we're also going to see further DDoSes. We know that. I mean, we're doing a lot of risk assessments. Piles and piles of risk assessments. We know in the future that we're going to have DDoS. It's just a matter of how big. How difficult is it going to be to figure out what's the correct traffic and what's the incorrect traffic? And we also know that the e-fraud is going to continue to escalate. So this is very exciting. I think it's very interesting to be in information security at the moment. See how the impact from the cyberspace is impacting our economies around the world, and see what the shifts in terms of the government and the legislation is going to be as well. So we need a lot more research, and really need a lot more innovation along the edges of the cybersecurity problems we have. I mean, our forensics tools and systems are not good enough. We don't have good enough log systems to be able to sift through all this information for the future. There's an array of problems that are interesting in terms of both research and innovation and startups. I think there's a great potential there. And we have an issue today already to finding the right people to work for us. We're going to have that problem in the future as well, I think. And that's why it's important for us to support Gjøvik and other colleges and universities in terms of getting good people to work for the industry. The other part is that we do a lot, and we need to do a lot more also in the future around the public-private partnership. I mean, I don't know if you know this term, but the collaboration we have between the banks, within the academia, within the government, I mean, the interdisciplinary relationships we have, very important to get the information we need in the future. And to continue, of course, close collaboration with law enforcement. Without doing that, I think we're not going to have a chance to combat this problem. If we don't collaborate with law enforcement and actually prosecute these criminals, we're going to lose this battle. So it's very important for us to stress that we have that relationship with law enforcement, and we hope that other businesses and universities and so forth also go to that step. So the other part is that we need to establish mechanisms to handle these attacks. I mean, we know we can't stop it all. We need a huge team to figure out how to stop the serious attacks in the midst of the problems. And I don't know if you noticed some of the publicity around this, but we are establishing a new cert for the finance, bank and finance. Some publicity on Digi.no and Aftenposten. But for us, this initiative is very key to handling our threat picture against Norwegian businesses. The CERT is very effective mechanisms in order to handle incidents, do early warning, and do a lot of information sharing between government and industry. And here you see some of the CERTs that are already effective, like the North CERT, which is the biggest, and the National CERT. Very interesting organization, and they are actually doing the coordination between the communities. But we also need each sector to take the responsibility of actually handling attacks, figuring out the threat intelligence behind it, doing the malware analysis and so forth. And these days we now are establishing what we call the finance cert. We have job postings on fin.no if you're interested in looking at that. And that's going to be a key initiative for us to handle sharp attacks towards Norwegian finance organizations. So there's three job postings there you can look at. I want to also highlight and expose some of the challenges we face. Maybe it could be interesting for you in terms of research and your further studies at Gjøvik. As I already touched upon, code is more advanced as we go along. And analysis is very extensive. Is there something we can do here? Is there methods we can use to do this analysis in a better way? Machine learning, there's a lot of tools and research we can look at to try to combat this issue. The other thing is we see that our criminals have very strict control to be able to go under the radar, to avoid being detected. It's very interesting. How can we actually find alert mechanisms that can show us that we have an issue? The log management systems, the way the systems are built today, is very manual. We can't sift through logs and gigabytes. We need better mechanisms to find the attacks in our logs. And we also see that the bleeding edge attacks that no one's seen before. I mean, we can't go to Microsoft or any government institution and say, hey, can you help us? No one have this information. We have to figure it out ourselves. So we need a lot of forensics capabilities. We need to figure out how to do the reverse engineering of all the malware that we're facing towards the customers. So at the moment, we're building a huge team that can go all the way down to reverse engineering, which is quite new for a bank in our society. If you could help us out figuring out the better tools to handle this situation, tools we use today are being outdated quite quickly. Monitoring, audit controls, that type of thing, it's very heavy tools that we're using, and they're not agile enough in terms of what we need. We need better and more agile tools to handle the bleeding edge Trojans and attacks. So quicker and better tools that are more agile is the dream for the future. And we also see the lack of knowledge of our vendors. I mean, we outsource pretty much everything. I think we're 99% outsourced in terms of operations. And our vendors, they're having a hard time keeping up. It's not enough people, knowledge, in the Norwegian industry to supply the vendors. From the inside perspective as well, we have a lot of worried customers that call the banks. I mean, Java was a nightmare. I don't know what the percentage was, but it's a huge increase of people calling the bank. Say, how am I going to handle this issue with Java? And they have people 90 years old, right, with the computers trying to help them out how to update Java. I mean, it's a nightmare. This is an issue for us. I mean, the team now is actually coaching people how to update Java. I mean, that shouldn't be a bank's task, but we're doing that to secure the customer's PCs. And also the alarms, large volume of alarms around this that we need to call customers, need to figure out, is this a PC that is infected? Well, you need to format the whole PC and start over again. It's a very heavy process for a customer. So these are some of the challenges we're facing. And if you could help us out with some of them, that would be very appreciated. Another topic, to switch a little bit to another point of view, my responsibility for the past 5 years not only been handling attacks, a lot of it is being aware of the risks. So what is this all about? Well, it's about risk management, right? Is this good risk management? Not really. Hiding the body under the mattress or in the closet or whatever. Just to exemplify, risk management for us is made the key decision tools in terms of information security. Do you all know about risk management? I'm not going to go a lot into this topic, but we do a lot of risk assessments, right? Risk analysis. Figuring out what kind of analysis and what kind of risks we face. That's fine. But what we've seen is that it's not used in the decision processes in terms of the organization's executive board, for instance. It's just, we've done it, we can go on, go to the next tasks. How do you use risk information? Well, through risk management. And having this topic high on your agenda is not that many Norwegian organizations that have. How are you going to actually use risk information in all your dialogue and all your discussions internally in the bank or ISP and so forth? And avoid having something like this. I mean, you know about the risk, but you haven't really discussed it with the management. Risk management is the key, is the process, is very important for us in order to combat the future problems. In fact, all our risk management discussions have unfortunately come through. I mean, that's not good, right? We've seen, X, Y, and Z, DDoSes and Trojans and so forth. They come through, and we have had this discussion up front with our business side, and because of that, we actually have been able to combat the Trojans pretty well. So risk management is a key topic for us, and will be a key topic for the future as well. And if you go into industry, I'm sure you're going to see that this is maybe an area that you might have to lift and do a lot of work on, because this is for the future. This is what's going to be difficult and interesting to implement. So our strategic point, our foundation, okay, security for us is a business enabler. If we don't have security in our internet banking, our apps, and so forth, it won't be released. It's as easy as that. And the incident response team and our counter threat is of course 24/7. We have a lot of counter threat initiatives that we handle, and that's maybe the most important team in our unit. In the old days, a couple of years ago, old days for me is a couple of years ago, we could eliminate vulnerabilities, okay, we eliminated vulnerabilities and monitor the perimeter, the fence around the castle, so to speak. Today, we do the same thing in terms of vulnerabilities, but we monitor a lot more. We monitor everything that we can to try to find abnormal traffic or abnormal behavior from our users. And this is a big shift. I mean, in all this, you could disclose the vulnerability and move on, and if there's no red alert, that's fine. So our architecture around monitoring has expanded quite drastically, and I think most businesses in Norway can support me on this. And why is this shift and why is this foundation important? It's because we have a strategic standpoint, which is not very, I would say, popular with executives, but we have to say we are compromised. If we don't have that point of view from the strategic point, you won't be able to combat these problems. So we are compromised, find the malware, find the box, find the traffic, and that's what we're working from when we're building our architecture. So it might be a little scary, but after a while, like, management is like, okay, well, we can live with that. I guess that's the way it is. But I think if you don't have a strategic standpoint, you won't be able to handle the threat picture we're in. At least not from a large organization like DNB, Telenor, or other critical national infrastructure and services. So quickly, to summarize what my key points are, I think the volume of data, the number of internet attacks, and the cybersecurity issues we face are going to grow hand in hand. That's obvious. I mean, as you saw in the first few slides, I mean, the massive amount of data, yes, we're going to have the same amount of cybersecurity issues in the future, for sure. The tension on the economic threat is here. I mean, you see the Obamas, you see in the key executives talking about this, but we are not sure how to combat it. We don't have all the answers, we don't have all the tools, the research, everything we need to figure it out how we're going to deal with this in the future. But we had the tension, and that's maybe the hardest part in my point of view. Getting the board, getting the presidents and the prime ministers and everybody to actually look at these problems and face it. I think it's very important with even more public knowledge around this, media attention. We need a lot more funding in terms of innovation, in terms of research and academia, no doubt about it. And we need more people to go into information security and study this topic. And I think also the research around this is paramount for us to be able to combat the long-term problems that we're looking at. So with that, I close my formal section. I don't know if you don't have any questions. For sure.
Thank you, Sofia, for an energetic and motivating talk, and I would say really drawing the devil on the wall, as we say in Norway, in a clear way, and challenging the students. So we open up for questions.
Thank you very much, Sofia. Very interesting. Unfortunately, I've been in business a bit too long.
I think it's just different channels and different pace. I think the pace we're looking at is a lot quicker, right? And that's the hardest part. I mean, we have hackers now. We have warnings on our website, and we're saying, "Oh, warning, customers, you don't click on this stuff." Within two hours, that the new attacks have actually parsed out that text. So the pace of things is tremendous, and I think that's the only thing that's changed.
Well, the bank is not using honeypots, but the Certs are using honeypots and the HoneyNet of Norway. Possibly. They're in the midst of starting up. So I'm not quite sure if they're going to use it or not, but that's a widely used way of actually trying to gather the intelligence information that we need. The Norwegian CERT or the HoneyNet project also is a very key initiative around that. But the bank does not have that type of initiative. But it's a very interesting field, honeypots. I'm a great supporter of the way of working. The banks in Norway have been on the forefront in terms of two-factor authentication and the one-time password, the OTP mechanisms. But we've seen, of course, the other areas like the Netherlands and German banks and so forth catching up, right, in terms of our security level. The key issues that I touched upon that made you paranoid is not solely combated with the one-time password. So we are now within the banking community is now looking at the next generation of one-time passwords and probably also a context-based solution. So that's probably the direction we're heading in terms of time frame. I'm not quite sure, but this is for sure going to be the next generation security mechanisms for our internet portals. Actually, we have a mobile bank ID which doesn't run Java. We're also using a lot of time right now to develop a new bank ID solution without Java. But for me, right now the focus is on Java. Well, tomorrow is going to be another. So for us to have two or three different methods to authenticate our users is very important. So we have more options to stand upon, more legs. I don't think Java is an isolated problem. I think you need a host of channels and technologies because tomorrow is going to be a different technology they face and they exploit. But I think they talked about the new Java, the new bank ID without Java this fall. I'm not quite sure exactly the release date on that. But it's coming. But you could use a mobile platform if you don't like it. Well, we don't have any official numbers that we talk about, but in terms of how many customers that we contact in 2012, we're talking about many thousand. And we only contact customers that we know for sure are infected. So we have different ways of categorizing this, right? And there's certain parameters that triggers, and we're 100% sure we'll call the customers and alert them because we don't want the customers to be worried unnecessary. The volume of alarms differs from Trojan to Trojan. Some Trojans we have full insight. We know exactly what the code does. It decrypted the seven layers, we know everything, right? Other Trojans that we're facing, we don't have all the insights. So depending upon how much information, how much intelligence we have, we have different layers of categorizing the alarms in terms of false positives and not. So that's how we work in the back end.
Global actions that's going on, and from your perspective, what's the most eminent global action you take now?
Well, I think that the direction that the global initiative from the EU, and the US and the last two or three years has been very key. Also, the Interpol and Europol is doing a lot around cyber security issues. The EC3, which is the new cyber security center at Europol, is now established this year. So I think there's a lot of initiatives globally that are initiated. I don't think they're all effective yet. I think there's going to be a number of years before we see all these initiatives play together, the policy, the legislation, the law enforcement, and all the different government actually sharing information. But I think that we can't get around these issues if you don't share information in a trusted manner. So I think there's a lot of good initiatives now. It's very interesting to see how the EU and US will handle these new policies. And I think that's going to set the stage globally for what we're going to see the next few years. So it's very interesting. This time of age, it's very interesting to see what's going on.
Final question. In terms of global initiatives, in the 80s, I was working at something called the Bankers Yellow Paper. This was a product of the education the only way we're going to solve the problem better is by getting more secure products coming out of the gate rather than us trying to patch them afterwards. Is there any global initiative that you would say, well, hey, vendors, stop doing this because you're killing everybody? That has to be done locally. Because we don't have information assurance. We're trying to build secure products, but secure systems of insecure products. Mm.
Actually, if you read the two requests now on the table from the US and EU, they're actually touching upon quite a bit of certification of systems and the operations part of that, the operations, the backbone of the banking systems for EU, for instance. So depending upon what they decide upon in the EU, we might get a requirement to certify some of our systems that are classified as critical national infrastructure or services. I think that will only solve part of the problem, though, because as I talked about, we do a lot for our infrastructure and services, but our biggest problem here is actually that the customer's PCs. So for us, it's important to see the whole value chain. I mean, from the customers surfing and actually getting infected all the way through. Because when this traffic is facing us, it looks like legitimate traffic, right? That's like our first view. It looks like the customer is just contacting us. So I think you need to look at both areas, both certification of the banking and critical national infrastructure, and you need to look at how you can actually secure the endpoints in the customer's PC better. So that together, I think, is going to have a lot more effect than just the certification part. But I think it's going to get there. It's just a matter of what type of certification and what type of framework they're going to require us to follow.
That concludes this season of these lectures. Sophia will be around for a little while afterwards. There's still some coffee and fruit, and we might head over to the cantina afterwards. So that's how that is. Thank you for coming. Thank you, Sophia, for coming up here and giving us the presentation and answering the questions. And let's give it up to the speaker for a final time.
Thank you.